afternoon here on TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca. Watching some French Open coverage here in the studio in between breaks here. A five-set marathon just ended. Tommy Haas just beat John Isner 10-8 in the fifth set to advance to the fourth round of the French Open. John Isner, if you recall, was the guy who played that Wimbledon match a number of years ago that ended 70-68 in the fifth set. So that's a guy who knows how to play.
That's
some,
your approximate age.
Yes, 70-68.
Speaking of 70-68,
yeah.
We're out last night.
Yeah.
The Jays game went to 18 innings?
17 innings. Yeah. You guys, it went so late that you guys came home from being out on the town, and the game was still going on.
No, we left where we were, and it was the 16th inning. I may have made a run at a fast food joint around town and got home, and the game was over. I was disappointed.
Yeah, you expected to fall. You know, at 3 in the morning, you expect to fall asleep to the Jays in the 17th inning while playing on the West Coast.
Well, I mean, the Jays didn't, like, from what I saw, at least the 13th inning on, did they even have a guy at second base?
I'll tell you what, if you want something to fall asleep to, the Jays will do the trick. They're a cure for insomnia right now.
Oh, God.
They just put Brandon Morrow on the DL, so he's obviously scratched. And they removed Ricky Romero from the 40-man roster.
Yeah, put him through waivers. Nobody claimed him, obviously.
Boy, has that... I mean, the life and times...
Ari Dickey's got to get that knuckleball going.
It's good. Thanks for that, Izzy.
Hold on. I love how you guys don't give me any credit for... I am a baseball fan. I'm not as hardcore as you guys. But I like baseball. I'm cheering for the Jays. I was a big Expos fan. Henry Rodriguez. I like the O'Henry bars.
We know you like O'Henry bars.
Yeah, I would always eat O'Henry bars when I watch the Expos.
Continuing on with our analysis of Zach Bogosian and his restricted free agent status. You know, we talk about offer sheets because it's certainly a possibility. I mean, it's within the rules of the NHL that Zach Bogosian could receive an offer sheet. It doesn't happen very often in the NHL. You know, would it stun you if Zach Bogosian had an offer sheet given his youth, given his experience, given his, you know, sort of his skill set as a defenseman? Would you be absolutely stunned if Zach Bogosian got an offer sheet?
The one, we're doing the analysis. We did Brian Little last week, and
right.
Blake Wheeler will be next week, and we're doing Bogosian today. Of those three, and those are the three key restricted free agents for the Winnipeg Jets.
Alex Burmistrov's car is very upset about that comment.
Yeah. I heard he shipped you a car. But, to me, Bogosian is the one target they have to worry about. Now, I was on with Rick on the Rona Roundtable about a week and a half ago, and offer sheets, of course, we haven't yet seen how the new variance rules and the year cap and the new CBA rules will affect offer sheets.
Because by the way, just for the record here, was it last offer sheet Jarmelson?
No, last year Weber.
Weber. From Philadelphia.
Oh, right. Okay, yeah, sorry.
But you can't structure the money now as you once did.
Forgot about that.
That'll be interesting to see. But he'd be the one guy that I'd say, okay, I could see a team targeting. I could see a Philadelphia targeting a guy like Bogosian to be that staple on the back end, pay tons of money for him. But it's going to be big money. And, I mean, at the end of the day, I don't see it happening. But he is the one of the three guys that they have as big RFAs this offseason that I could see being a target.
And, again, we should mention, too, and Richie can correct me because, you know, Richie's better versed in this, but also, you know, of course, Weber, totally forgot about that, but you have to think if a guy's going to get an offer, if a guy's going to get an offer sheet from a team, there has to be an inkling that the guy's not going to re-sign, right? I'm right about that, right? I mean, if a team...
Well, no, it has nothing to do with the player. The player has no option.
No, what the team's intentions are with the player, right? Because there was a chance Shea Weber wasn't going to re-sign in Nashville, right? I don't think that's an option with Bogosian.
I think that if you ask the Nashville Predators, the Philadelphia Flyers did them a favor by signing Shea Weber to that offer sheet to some degree,
getting him signed long term.
Because if he doesn't get that offer sheet and he's playing out the last year of his contract and he sees Ryan Suter leave for Minnesota and he looks around his team there in Nashville and says, you know, I don't know if I necessarily like how this franchise is going. Are they in store for a bit of a dip?
He could have just gone to arbitration and got the hell out of there.
He could have gone to arbitration, the one-year deal, and be gone.
I agree, but you're always trying to drive up the price in the years, right? I don't know if the Predators wanted to sign Weber for that many years.
I don't think they necessarily did, but I don't think that if it wasn't for that offer sheet, I'm not sure that Shea Weber doesn't get traded last year and isn't the Nashville Predator for the next decade if the Predators want him.
I would be surprised if a team like Edmonton or pick a team, Philly, Detroit, a team that really needs a defenseman offered Bogo 7 years, $42 million or something, you know what I mean, to get the price up.
There's no poison pill there. If it's a seven-year, $42 million offer sheet, the Jets are probably taking that, no questions asked.
The Jets probably would match that. And you also, we talked about Weber. Remember that Bogosian, unlike Wheeler and Little, Bogosian is now 5 years accrued in the National Hockey League, so he's a restricted free agent still, but he's not. If he went to arbitration this year and took a one-year deal, he would just be an RFA again next year.
Right.
So
he's 2 years away from unrestricted free agency. Yeah, which really is a big difference between his situation and, say, the situation that Toby Enstrom was in last year when he was only 1 year away from being an unrestricted free agent. And obviously you pay more when you buy out a guy's unrestricted free agency status.
So to factor into account when we're talking about the money, you know, you have 2 years of RFA status discounted by whatever percentage it is. The numbers, I think it was 20-25% the last time I read. I'm not exactly sure when you're talking the total number.
What about a trade?
Well, Drew, I mean, I don't think a trade's in the offing. I don't think the Jets would be looking to trade a guy like Zach Bogosian unless they got some kind of crazy offer that made them consider it. But I don't think they'd actively shop him by any means. I'm sure they'll get calls on him because lots of teams will want a guy like him. But again, unless they get some kind of crazy offer, we'll give you the first overall pick and this and that, blah, blah, blah. Okay, fine. But I don't think it's going to happen.
Remember what we've always said, too, as far as trades go. You always lose if you're trading the best player, right? So I can't see a trade where you're getting a player back of his quality. I would be
shocked. I mean, it would have to be a godfather offer, the likes of which, or the, you know, the Jets would have to be, you know, quote unquote foolish to turn down. I don't expect that's going to happen. I think an offer sheet is it would be the greater of the two possibilities. I don't see it happening unless the negotiations between the Jets and Bogosian side really go ugly. But then they'll just
go
to arbitration.
And
it's important to note about arbitration is a player can only go once to arbitration.
Yep.
So if he doesn't go, you know, if they agree to a 1 year contract this year, he could get arbitration next year, but he can't do it this year and next year.
And I do think that the Jets organization does think extremely highly of him, and they do pencil him in as a huge piece of the core of the team going forward. And, you know, coming back from injury a little bit earlier and you know, he's a good team player. Richie mentioned, you know, that he's got leadership potential. I think he does, too. He's one of those guys that I think, you know, that he's one of those super popular guys in the dressing room, and people kind of feed off of his intensity and passion for the game.
Do you see leadership from him in an on-ice role?
Yeah, I do. For sure. I mean, you saw him against, Carolina. You saw him against Toronto, stepping up for teammates, getting intense, that passion of fire. Sometimes you don't see that much anymore, and I think he's a little bit old-fashioned that way, so I absolutely do see that, Drew.
So let's hypothetically say negotiations between the two sides aren't going great, and they decide they're going to go to arbitration. One side files for arbitration, you know, perfectly within their rights. Which of the two sides, Bogosian's team or, you know, Kevin Cheveldayoff and the Winnipeg Jets?
You should clarify before, Drew, the team can also take the player to arbitration.
Right,
so.
I'm saying either side has the option. Who has the stronger arbitration case?
That's a really good question. I don't see it necessarily getting to that point.
Neither do I, for the record.
But if you do get to that point, I think it's probably fairly neutral. I think the Jets use the fact that he was injured and his totals aren't going to be great against him in some ways. He doesn't have the highest offensive totals, so I think that probably helps the Jets in arbitration because there's only certain statistics that can be considered, if I understand the old CBA correctly. In terms of Bogosian's agent, he has to talk about the big minutes he's played and, you know, the production and limited time and things like that. I don't think there's a huge advantage to either side for going to arbitration at all.
And I think, again, you know, people will look at Bogo's numbers, 30 points in the first Jet season and 14 last year, asterisk being in 30 games. But that's not, you can't just look at point totals, right, or games played. You're paying for, again, you know, I've said it, I sound like a broken record here, but, I mean, you're signing this guy to be a huge piece of your organization going forward. Same that you did with Andrew Ladd, same that you did with Toby Enstrom, Pavlik, Kane. He's a part of that core. He's a crucial part of that core. Like, when you're talking about those guys, I mean, he's a huge part of it, and they've developed him in the Thrashers Jets organization. So you're paying for more of that as opposed to, you know, the point totals and all that. That factors in. But you can't get too fixated on that.
Let me ask you this from an on-ice perspective. Mm-hmm. Does Zach Bogosian make his defensive partners better?
Yeah, I think so. I think when you're able to skate and take away space, like he can, when you're able to join the rush, when you're able to do a lot of different things, when you're a defenseman with a variety of a very vast skill set, I think you always make your defensive partners better.
Remember, guys, when Enstrom was out of the lineup this year and Byfuglien was out of the lineup for a little bit, but remember when it was Bogo and Hainsey as the top pair? I thought that they did an excellent job. I think Hainsey, too, did a great job, and I think he benefited from playing with Bogosian. But I think he does make players better. I think he's the type of guy, as Richie mentioned earlier in the segment, he's the type of guy that can pinch in and get back. He's got that natural skating ability. He can make a guy like Hainsey, who's not the best skater, but he's a smart player, he can make him look better. Absolutely.
Let me ask you this, finally, before next segment where we break down the actual numbers and how we think this is going to unfold. And you can just give me a yes or no now, and we can extrapolate after the break.
Sure.
Would you sign Zach Bogosian to a max years contract, which under the new CBA is 8 years for re-signing a free agent on your own team?
I wouldn't give him 8 years. Some people have said that they would. I wouldn't give him 8 years because in my mind, 8 years is reserved for the best of the best. When you know absolutely positively what you're getting. You know, we talked about Drew Doughty in the article. Drew Doughty signed the 8-year deal actually prior to the 8-year max being implemented in this previous CBA. But I mean, that's the kind of guy who's worth 8 years. When you see what these real long-term deals, if he's not Zdeno Chara or Drew Doughty, I don't give a guy who's not that an 8-year deal. I just don't.
In Richie's article, he has Bogo signing for 6. So I like that as well. I do think that 6 years is kind of, you know, where you have him locked up, and then 6 years from now he'll be a UFA, and then again, then you offer him another 4, 5, 6 year deal, something like that. So 8 years, I think, is a little bit too much, because again, it's the max. So 8 years is the new 15, if you want to call it that, right? Yeah. So I think 6 years is probably where we're going to see this deal.
Let's go to break. When we come back, we're going to finally give our figures and how we see this negotiation breaking down. We're talking about Zach Bogosian. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. For this Saturday afternoon here on TSN 1290, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. Joined in studio by Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. We've spent the last 45 minutes or so discussing Zach Bogosian and his RFA contract situation with the Winnipeg Jets. You know, we've broken down his pros, his cons, and all of the intricacies of his game. It's time to really figure out what you expect Zach Bogosian to sign for, if you expect him to sign with the Winnipeg Jets. Richie, you're Kevin Cheveldayoff off to start. What's the argument you're making to Zach Bogosian's representative as to why he deserves to sign and for what amount?
Well, you know, Drew, when you come into that negotiation, you have to say, we think he's a valuable part of our organization. You have to preface everything. We think he's a valuable part of our organization. We want him to be here for the long haul. We think, based on his performance to date, he's proven to be a solid offensive player, but not an exceptional offensive player. We think his defensive game is rounding into form. We value him highly. We think he can be a horse on our back end and provide big minutes in all situations. We don't think he's of the class of the top guys in the league, and we can't pay him as such. But at the same time, we think he's maybe a little more valuable than some of the other guys who provide all-around roles based on how he's caught to that point, the fact that he's 5 years into his career but only 23 years old, and he's coming into his prime years. We think he can be a valuable part of this organization. We want to lock him up and give him a very reasonable amount of money. If you're Bob Murray, you come back and say, well, hey.
Bob Murray being Zach Bogosian's agent.
He's your best defenseman. That's what you would argue. He's your best defenseman. He's only scratching the surface of his offensive ability. You saw that in a small sample size last year, but he's capable of much more. He can skate. He can hit. He can do everything you need to do. He wants to be in Winnipeg. Why wouldn't you lock this guy up for 8 years at $6 million a year? At least. Ask for 6.5 or so. You know what I mean? Why wouldn't you lock it up? This is a guy that you can rely on just for not even worry about it. 8 years. Wake me up in 8 years, and then you'll have 8 productive years and solid years from Zach Bogosian. It's a slam dunk, no question about it.
Can the Winnipeg Jets use the fact that they signed Tobias Enstrom for $5.75 million per season
as the upper limit that they can go to regarding Zach Bogosian?
They can if they want to. I'm not sure for sure that argument's going to hold a lot of water. I think the reason that you have it, the reason you would argue below that number is, of course, there's an extra RFA year there. It's just discounted. That's what they argue, but they did pay him quite a bit. So,
and that Drew raises an interesting point there, though, because next year, Tobias Enstrom is the highest paid guy on the team, right?
Yeah.
So
pending whatever happens with Bogosian, but
right,
yeah,
right. And you know, Richie's going to give the final number here. Waiting in suspense. I know the answer already, though. I've read the article.
Anybody who's read the article knows the final answer.
Right. But it is an interesting question because you're essentially saying, you know, I think what the Jets will say and that we're kind of talking about now is you might disagree on whether Bogosian's our best defenseman or second best defenseman or third best defenseman. It's either one of those three, right? But it's tough to pay him more than Enstrom, who is unquestionably your power play quarterback, right? So I think that is something to be considered here. But, you know, as Richie said, you know, that might not be the position they necessarily take, right?
Well, on this show, we talk a lot about leverage mm-hmm. and contract leverage and using your leverage when you're negotiating a contract. And we often lament general managers that don't use the leverage to their ability.
Yep.
Who in this negotiation has the leverage, or is it pretty even?
If I had to pick one over the other, it's probably Bogosian, but it's fairly even. And I say Bogosian because, I mean, the Jets need him to let him go arbitration 1 year, whatever number comes out with, and then be that pending, you know, have the next year being a pending UFA. You have more leverage, and you could say, okay, we could lose him for nothing. So I think at the end of the day, the player is a little bit more leverage here,
mm-hmm.
but not a ton more. I don't think the Jets are in the worst situation.
As he?
I think it's similar to Evander Kane, to be honest with you. You know, Evander Kane had the 30-goal season, and then he signed the 6-year deal. And I think it was maybe a little bit higher than we expected. But again, Kane, I think, hasn't scratched the surface yet either.
But he had no leverage, and that's why the kind of odd part about that. They both
that's
said
true.
Okay,
he came out of entry-level.
Entry-level, no arbitration
that's
rights.
That's true.
Right, the same situation that Bogosian was in 2 years ago, where he finishes his first contract, and then he's got no arbitration eligibility. He's just, you know, you're an RFA, and you either sign with what we give you, or you don't play hockey.
Drew, I do think that it's fairly even, in the sense that the Jets want him to be a part of that core, with Ladd and Enstrom, and Wheeler. We believe will also be part of that core, and Pavlik. And so I think that they'll find a mutual. I do think this one will be not as long. I don't think we're going to see, an Evander Kane drag out. Remember, he signed right before the lockout?
Mm-hmm. Right.
The CBA expired, sorry. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I don't think that's going to happen with any of these guys.
Well, then let's get down to the brass tacks.
Mm-hmm.
What does Zach Bogosian sign for? How many years? And, you know, how high would you go if you were the Winnipeg Jets?
Well, I think I'm going to give you the answer, but I think I want to explain quickly. We talked about Drew Doughty, Brent Burns, Alex Edler, Braden Coburn, and Mark Edward Vlasic. The average term that those players signed for was 5.6 years. So 5.5 years, you know, say 6 years at a high point, okay?
Okay.
The cap hit average for those defensemen, with Drew Doughty being the highest and Mark Edward Vlasic being the lowest, is an average of $5.3 million. The years accrued in the NHL when they signed that contract, average of 5.4, so if you average it down, 5 years. So far, Bogosian's played 5 years in the National Hockey League, and you have an average cap hit of 5.3 in term of six years. NHL contract. This will be Bogosian's third NHL contract. He had his entry-level deal for 3 years. He signed a bridge contract, as they're termed, for 2 years after the entry-level deal. This would be his third contract.
Let me just interrupt you for a second there. When you mentioned those previous players, Drew Doughty never actually signed that bridge contract.
Right.
He just got the big 8-year deal right after his entry-level deal.
If you take the average of the five players we mentioned, that would be their third contracts as well.
Right.
And their average age is 24.8. Bogosian will be 23 in July. So you're close there. You're not right on, but you're close. Take those numbers. I put a lot of value in those numbers, Drew, because I think you're comparing them to what there is across the league, what's been paid across the league, and I think Bogosian gets a little bit more than the average there. I think it's $5.5 million is a reasonable number for a term of 6 years for a total of $33 million. So a 6-year deal for $33 million was what I believe is a reasonable solution for both the Winnipeg Jets and Zach Bogosian in a contract negotiation.
I think he's worth every penny of it. I really do. I think that I have extremely high expectations of where Bogosian's game goes this year. And I think, you know, in the short sample size this year, I really do think his game stepped up a notch. So I think, you know, Jets, and I think a lot of Jets fans are going to be excited, you know, about the potential that he has.
What number would shock you if they went, you know, what number would you say if they come out and they say, we've signed him to a X number of year deal for X amount of dollars, what number would you well, see that?
You give him like 8 years, $56 million bucks. I'm like, okay, why?
Okay, fine.
Right, but on the other hand, guys, if he only signs, if he only signs for 2 or 3 years, I'll be shocked.
Yes.
If he signs another bridge deal, no way. That would shock me because I don't think either side wants that.
Well, if he signs another bridge deal as the Winnipeg Jets organization, wouldn't you say well, this is a guy who doesn't want to be here for a long term?
Right.
If they went 6 years, $6 million, would you be okay with that still, or would you say it's an overpay?
I would think it'd be a little bit of an overpay, but it's close enough. I think I do think you keep overpaying a little bit by $500,000, and if you're not going to be a total cap team, you're eating into somebody else's contract, and it's not like the Jets have the best depth players. Having said that, you want to pay more to your star players than worry about the depth guys. But I think it'd be a little bit of an overpay, but nothing catastrophic. I mean, it's $3 million over a course of 6 years.
There you have it. Zach Bogosian, we expect 6 years. We expect $33 million. That's right? Did I get that right?
Mm-hmm.
There you go. $5.5 million a year. Obviously, we'll wait and see how that actually unfolds over the summer. When do you expect this deal to get done by?
Well, I mean, all the timelines are pushed back this year and pushed up this year. Excuse me. It's kind of a tighter timeline.
Sure.
I mean, you want to do it before arbitration. One of the parties is going to elect for arbitration. So it's going to happen sometime in July. And you have to wonder when. Probably, I'd say probably post-draft. I mean, the guys are focusing a lot on the draft right now.
Yeah.
And they're going to qualify him, obviously. When a team qualifies a player, that means they match the contract from the previous year and they retain his rights, and the player will reject the qualifying offer. But you have to qualify the player to retain his rights. So they'll qualify him. They'll probably engage in some negotiations. This is a deal that probably gets done in the first week of July, maybe the first week and a half of July.
Not being a fairly contentious negotiation?
You know, I wouldn't think so, Drew, but... crazier things have happened.
Sure.
I mean, Bogosian waited, as he made this point to me when I was writing the article. Or I think it was Remus. Remus made the point that Bogosian took a long time to sign that first deal.
So find the second deal, but first deal
with the Jets.
The bridge deal, right. It was a case of deadline hunting, which we've spoken about on the show before.
We have?
Yeah. Well, it'll be interesting to see. And like you mentioned, you just mentioned the NHL draft. We will be there down in New Jersey for the NHL draft coming up at the end of June. But let's right now go to break, and when we come back on the other side, we're going to talk NHL draft with TSN's draft expert, Craig Button. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
Hostler and Lawless on TSN 1290.
We're in New York City, and Bill is giving us a tour of some of the NHL facilities, and he takes us to the NHL store, and then Bill is grabbing a Coyotes jersey for his son, and Hostler said to him, you might as well have the jersey. You own the team.
Drive home with H&L weekdays from 4 to 6 on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
Welcome to Route 19, the best road around, and I'm a part of it. Just last month, I was a glass bottle full of grape juice. Then I was bought, emptied, and turned into road base. Being recycled is awesome. Now life as a highway is great. Nothing beats the open road.
Now you know what your empty beverage containers can become. Give them a new life after you're done, and recycle everywhere.
At MTS, we know business doesn't stop when you leave the office. It goes where you go. To meetings, to the gym, or to date night, even though you totally promised to turn off your phone. That's why only MTS offers unlimited data plans on Manitoba's fastest 4G LTE wireless network. Edit and save internal documents instantly. Send and receive emails with large attachments effortlessly. All while on the go and all without worrying about data limits. Visit 4biz.ca for details on the new business class plans. Conditions apply.
I just can't bear the thought of cooking. I'm in the mood for East Indian food.
But I want to watch the game.
Sports and East Indian food?
Surely you're doomed.
unless you go to Doom, as in Doom Restaurant and Sports Lounge. It's the only place in Winnipeg where you can dine on delicious East Indian fare and not miss a second of the game. Make room for Doom. Doom Restaurant and Sports Lounge on the corner of Donald and York in the heart of downtown.
TSN 1290, CFRW Winnipeg. All sports.
Unbelievable stuff!
All the time. A division of Bell Media. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290.
Down, 1 hour to go. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and NHL news is www.illegalcurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
We welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. He's TSN's draft expert, Craig Button. Craig, good afternoon, and thanks very much to join us.
Yeah, good afternoon to you guys. Glad I can be part of it.
Craig, obviously, you know, the Memorial Cup just ended last week, and that was always, that's, you know, certainly a big showcase for the best players in this draft, and you couldn't ask for much more with Jones, McKinnon, and Drouin, you know, the spotlight they had on them playing in the Mem Cup final. You know, did McKinnon's performance in the Memorial Cup change your mind as to, you know, if he should be the first overall draft pick?
Well, I think that the way I would position it is that those three players, Nathan McKinnon, Jonathan Drouin, and Seth Jones, they're all outstanding players. And as the draft order stands right now, with Colorado picking first, McKinnon picking, Florida picking second, and Tampa Bay picking third, I think the order of the draft is going to be Jones, McKinnon, and Drouin. And I think that when you look at the Colorado Avalanche and you look at a glaring weakness in their prospect pool, it's on defense. And number one defenseman that can play the all-around game, they're not out there. They're not available in trade. They're not available to get drafted. And, you know, when you got a chance to get those guys, you got to take them. So, and I think McKinnon's a perfect fit for the Florida Panthers. Now, if everything switches around and the order and the team switch amongst themselves, well, then McKinnon can go number one. But to me, I'm watching the conference finals, leading into the conference finals, and I see Chara and I see Letang and I see Duncan Keith and I see Drew Doughty, and those guys have a significant impact on the game, scoring or not scoring, defensively, offensively, physically, in all the critical areas. So to me, Nate McKinnon is a superb player. He's going to be an elite player in the National Hockey League. But at the same time, Memorial Cup is on a big platform. But I can tell you guys this. I've seen a lot of these players. I've seen these players play in multiple environments. You go back to the Ivan Olenka tourney last year. Nate McKinnon had a hat trick in the gold medal game. Zachary Fekale was unbelievable. Jonathan Drouin in the Quebec League playoffs, simply outstanding. Seth Jones in the World Junior Tournament. And in the Western Hockey League, this guy was like plus 48, plus 50, somewhere around there, yep, and had like 56 points. I mean, we're talking about elite players. So to me, you know, I don't see it's a very thin line between them. But to me, the way the draft order is right now, it's not about one tournament. And to me, if I'm the Colorado Avalanche, I'm taking Seth Jones.
Craig, I wanted to ask you about the NHL Draft Combine, which took place earlier this week in Toronto. And Kevin Cheveldayoff was on the round table with Rick Ralph, and he called it speed dating on steroids. How much stock do you put into the NHL Draft Combine? And maybe, you know, for hockey fans, what does that really do as far as determining where a player might go in the draft?
Okay, well, here's what I'm going to say. Kevin's referring to the interviews. He's referring to the interview, yep, process where teams are spending, you know, 15, 20 minutes or so with players. So, that, I mean, that's the speed dating part of it. And, you know, I think that's a very accurate description of it. I mean, it's a way to get to know the players somewhat. You're not going to, just like when you go on a five-minute lunch date, you're not getting married at the end of the 5 minutes, but you might decide, hey, listen, I want to move to the next step. Hey, let's meet for dinner or whatnot. A lot of these teams are going to spend more time with fewer players for longer periods of time. And I think it's an opportunity for the teams to ask a couple of questions that maybe prevalent in their minds, get the players to answer them, whatever those may be. You know, a concern with something happened on the ice, a concern off the ice, and get it cleared up and everything. But it is to Kevin's description. But the combine part of it, I think it serves an incredibly important function for National Hockey League. Number one, I mean, it's a centralized location. So all the players come into one area. It's run by top-notch professionals at York University. Dr. Gledhill's done this for many years, so there's a great benchmarking of what is it, what's relevant, what translates, what tests, you know, can really help a team determine, you know, what a player needs or whatnot. So instead of running 10, 12, 15 places and doing multiple physical fitness tests, it's run under the auspices of a top-notch organization with a lot of history. That's number one. Number two, you get the benchmarking. You get these players, and everybody now knows where they stand. And I think that's what you need to do. You're talking about 17- and 18-year-old young men. And, you know, it's so much of what of where they end up is going to be about development. So this is a great opportunity for the players to know where they stand and for teams to know where the players are and what they have to do in the development process. And, you know, you can say, hey, listen, geez, we really like what this guy does on the ice. Now we see he's got a lot of room here. You know, it might determine that that guy's got a lot of room to improve. On the flip side of it, you might say, geez, that guy's a lot stronger than we realize. He might be closer to playing than we realize. So that whole development equation comes in. And lastly, but most importantly, every single player goes through a thorough medical evaluation. And whether it be for existing injuries to determine if there's any long-term implications, or from a medical point of view, anything that is undetected that people don't know about. And we saw it a couple years ago in the draft. David Carl, Matt Carl's younger brother, was diagnosed with a heart problem, a life-threatening heart problem if he continued playing competitive sports. They told him he should stop. Tampa Bay Lightning drafted him late in the seventh round as a ceremonial pick. If one life can be saved because of that process, then this entire week is worth every single dollar spent. So those are the things that I want to impress upon everybody, that NHL and NHL Central Scouting do a fabulous job.
That's a great point, especially on that last one.
Yeah, absolutely. Couldn't agree more, Craig. In terms of the depth of this draft, people always talk, you know, is it a deep draft? What do you compare it to? Can we ask you that question? This draft, and is it top heavy? Is it as deep as you've seen in a long time? How would you rank it?
Well, I'll tell you what, it's as deep as I've seen since 2003. And we know that what the 2003 draft has brought. Mm-hmm. Well into the second round, we're talking about really quality players. Shea Weber, David Backes, Jimmy Howard, and Patrice Bergeron. I mean, we're talking about champions, Olympic gold medalists, major award winners. We're talking top-end players, and I haven't even mentioned the first round. I think this draft has quality through the first round into the second round, and I think that all the teams in this draft have an opportunity to not only get NHL players, but to get players that can be real difference makers for their organizations going forward. That's how deep I think it is.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. We're joined by Craig Button talking about the NHL draft upcoming at the end of June. Craig, we want to spend some time with you talking about some players we expect will still be around when the Jets were going to get ready to pick, give or take, around the 13th overall spot this in the first round. You know, the first guy on our list, and this is looking at your Craig's list from April 3rd. Next one's coming out June 4th, so you can look for that.
The last one.
Yeah, the last one before the draft. You can look for that on TSN.ca this week. You know, the first guy that comes to mind, he's obviously got the last name, he's got that degree, Max Domi. Do you, first of all, expect him to still be around at number 13? And what are the pros and cons of his game?
Okay, well, here's what I'll say. I think it'll be close if he's around there at 13. I have him in my top 10. He will remain in my top 10 when June 4th comes along. And I just see a real offensively dynamic player. Max has continually improved in all the areas of the game that they're going to require success at the NHL level. He's faster. He's quicker. He's got great hands. He's able to make plays in traffic. He's got great vision. He's got great poise. And you combine all those things with a great determination to make a difference in the game. And to me, I see a player that's going to be a real good, strong offensive player at the National League level. And he's competitive. And, you know, one of the things that, you know, I know we can take out our measuring tapes and we can say, oh, he's 5'9". Yeah, I know he's 5'9". There's nothing small about Max Domi. Competitively, mentally, or physically. He's a big kid from the waist down. He doesn't get knocked down. He's determined. He's competitive. And I think he's going to be a terrific NHL player. So if there's a downside, I mean, you can find a downside with any of these players. But I just think he's going to be a terrific, terrific NHL player.
Craig, another guy we want to ask you about, of course, another London Knight, is Nikita Zadorov. A lot of people thought in the Memorial Cup he boosted his ranking and might get into the top 10. Maybe we'll see that in the next Craigslist. But are the Jets going to avoid him because they took Jacob Trouba last year, or is he maybe a guy that they would draft because of his potential? What do you see him going, you know, in the draft coming up in about 4 weeks?
Yeah, well, here's what I would say. I'm not privy to what teams are thinking or whatnot, but I do know this about Nikita, and I believe this about NHL teams. They're looking for players that can make a difference to their lineup, and I don't think you can look at just because they drafted Jacob Trouba last year that you don't want another unique defenseman. And I think Nikita is a unique defenseman. He's big, he's strong, he can skate. He's another guy that I think has tremendous room to grow and tremendous potential to get better. And you look at what he has right now at the ripe old age of 18, and now you start to think about the Winnipeg Jets, and you start to think about, wow, Peter Zadorov, Jacob Trouba, Mark Scheifele up the middle of the ice, and you're starting to go, whoa, that's not a fun place to go and play anymore. And, you know, we look at big defensemen that can skate. You know, again, I say it all the time, these guys, you can't find them. And I'll tell you who he reminds me of. He reminds me of a young Larry Robinson. We all know what Larry Robinson became.
No kidding.
And he's a big-time competitor.
Moving to the WHL, Craig, when we just spoke about two London Knights. Hunter Shinkaruk, he's a, you know, center's right winger. He's, again, not a huge guy. But what do you see for him in terms of his, what's his biggest asset in terms of his skill level, or is there something else? And what do you foresee for him in the future?
Yeah, well, with Hunter, you know what he, again, like, it's easy to look at the tape measure, so let's just move that away. Mm-hmm. Hunter's lightning quick. He's got lightning quick feet, he's got lightning quick hands, and he's got a lightning quick mind. So he sees offensive opportunities, and he pounces on them, and he's hungry to pounce on them. He's competitive. He plays in the heavy areas. You know, I've watched Hunter for a long time, and he doesn't get knocked down. You know, one of the things that I always think with players, I don't care if you're big or you're small, if you can't withstand the challenges of physical play, I see big players get pushed away.
Yep.
I don't see Hunter Shinkaruk get pushed away. I don't see him get denied. He doesn't allow himself to get denied. He pays a price around the net. And he's a player that, coming off the wing, you know, he can make plays, but he gets a half a step, he's by you, and he's into the net. And he's always like that guy that he's like a rattlesnake. He sees his prey and he pounces. And you don't know you've been bit until it's too late. And I think that Hunter has those dynamic qualities of scoring. I see him as a top six forward that can score. And again, those guys don't come along very often, and they're not easy to attain, acquire. So you go through the draft, and you start to think, and I start to think about the Winnipeg Jets, and I start to think about some of the players they have that are locked in. You got Kane, and you got Andrew Ladd. You got Mark Scheifele coming. And you think of Brian Little, and you start to think about adding a Hunter Shinkaruk or a Max Domi. I think that just bolsters your offensive group and makes you that much stronger if they decide to go that way.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're talking about the NHL draft with Craig Button of TSN. Craig, a guy who was ranked number 5 in the international skaters, he was playing for Djurgården in Sweden last year, is Alexander Wennberg. You know, you have him 13th in your last Craigslist. What is the best attribute that Wennberg brings to the table?
Well, the first thing about Alexander is that he has continually gotten better over the past year, past 2 years. To me, great skater. He's quick, he's fast, and he uses it to his advantage offensively. He uses it to his advantage defensively. So he can really close ice when he doesn't have the puck. He can really threaten and put pressure on when he has the puck and opening up plays. He can play any wing. He can play left or he can play right wing. I think he's ultimately going to be a center because I think he's so smart there. I think that he's one of those exceptionally smart players that is able to read the play and understand what needs to happen at any given point in time. So that might be a pass. That might be a shot. That might be, hey, listen, I got to drive the net here. I'm not going to, it's not about me. It's about opening up the play for somebody else. I just think that he's one of those what I call complete players. And, you know, guys, I don't think he's going to be around when Winnipeg picks. So if Winnipeg remains at 13, I just don't see Alexander Wenberg being there at 13.
Craig, the next guy we wanted to ask you about is Anthony Mantha, and we should mention, I believe there's no relation to former Jet Mo Mantha, in case anybody was wondering, but Anthony Mantha is ranked 14th, played in the QMJHL. He might be around when the Jets pick at 13. What can you tell us about Anthony Mantha?
Yeah, he's no relation to Mo. Mo's an American, and Anthony is from Quebec. And Anthony is the grandson of Marty Pronovost, so he's from the Pronovost family.
Okay.
A lot of people don't know that, but you know, the very famous Pronovost family. That's that's his grandfather is Marty. Anyway, that being said, I really like Anthony Mantha. I think he's a player that has continually improved. He's big. He's rangy. He's a guy that can score in multiple ways. He can score from 30 feet. He can score on the rush. He can score beating you one-on-one. He can score in front of the net, deflecting pucks and picking up rebounds. I think he scored 50 goals this year. And this might sound funny, but I think he's only beginning to scratch the surface of his potential. He can skate well. And when I watch him play, I just have images of James Neal. That's what I see in Anthony Mantha.
Okay.
And James Neal, to me, I watched James Neal at the same age, and I didn't think James Neal was as advanced as Anthony Mantha, but I really see similarities between those two players. And I mean, we know now that James Neal last year was a first team All-Star winger in the National Hockey League.
Some real talent in this draft. And we'll wind up the interview, Craig, by asking you about Josh Morrissey. Again, going back to the WHL, he's a defenseman. What does he bring to the table?
Yeah, he reminds me of Gary Suter. And I don't know, the Winnipeg Jets fans will probably remember Gary Suter playing not only with the Calgary Flames, but also with the Chicago Blackhawks. And that's what I see. He's an exceptional skater. And when I talk about skating, I'm talking about defensively and offensively. I mean, he's one of those defensemen that's really hard to break down one-on-one. And because his feet work is exceptional, balance is exceptional. Then you start to think about what the defenseman has to do, turning to go get pucks. He reads the play, and he can turn, and with excellent explosive quickness, he beats people to the pucks, and then he can escape pressure. So when you look at just those defensive qualities playing behind the blue line, I think they're essential for a defenseman, and I think that Josh has all of them. Two, he's a guy that will step up and play physical. He likes to play physical. He can catch you in open ice with really good open ice body checks, and he's a guy that competes. He doesn't give in to any type of physical challenge. Number three, he's got excellent offensive awareness. He's one of those guys that can jump into the attack at the right time and create advantages for you offensively. He's got a really good shot. He doesn't have an overpowering shot from the blue line, but he's got a shot that gets through to the net, and he's a guy that jumps into the attack. And, I think once he physically matures, he's got so much physical maturity potential in front of him, because he in 2 or 3 years' time, once that process has taken place, Josh is going to be a very strong player, and I think when you see him at 20, 21 years of age, he's got a chance to be a real tour de force, so to speak, in the National Hockey League.
He's TSN's draft expert, Craig Button. Thanks very much for joining us this afternoon on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Look forward to seeing you at the end of the month in New Jersey, and of course, you can look for your last up-to-date Craigslist Tuesday on TSN.ca.
Thanks for having me. Always my pleasure.
Take care, Craig. Thanks very much.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah.
Let's go to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290.
I'm happy Remus was on time for today's show because last night showed up in the middle of the first period of the hockey game. Didn't fill up the water. Missed the whole first period. Wasn't rely. You know, you can't rely on the guy.
I heard about that. You had some trouble with the 720s versus 740s start time of the IC hockey team game there.
And the interesting part was that we had texts after the game. We were reading texts in the room about how Remus told people the game was at 720 and then sent a picture of the schedule.
More Remus, more problems. What do you have to say here?
Defend yourself.
I had a long day.
That's a hell of a defense. You should really be a lawyer with that defense.
Was the spelling bee that did it or what?
Yeah, I had to watch the PVR at spelling bee. That was it. I got caught up in watching the PVR.
Oh, well. We're glad you made it here by noon for today. Anyways, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN.
Wasn't here by noon.
I was in the drive through getting your guys' coffee.
That was nice of you.
Because that's what I do now.
We appreciate
get
that.
Get you guys' coffee.
That was nice of you to do that.
Yeah, we do appreciate it.
You do more
that.
Than that, Reem. I hear from Huss that you're never late for the warm-up.
Is that true?
It's because I don't have to leave to be anywhere for it.
You're here the whole time. Oh, so you're actually really 6 hours early for the warm-up is what it is. Yeah, anyways, that works well. Craig Button from TSN had just joined us to talk about the entry draft, or the NHL draft. They dropped the word entry. And if you missed any of that interview, I am reliably informed it's going to be on tsn1290.ca pretty shortly. Oh. So you can look forward to that. You know, we wanted to ask Craig, not about the top guys, because we know about the top guys. Yeah. We've seen the top guys, and the Jets aren't going to be drafting one of the top guys unless they move up unexpectedly.
Don't get a Jets jersey
position.
With Seth Jones on it.
No, it would be a poor mistake on your part if you were to do that. So we went for those middle guys, those guys that the Jets, you know, are going to be targeting. I don't think Max Domi's around at that number. I don't think he'll be there at 13. But it will be interesting to see how that all plays out in New Jersey, where Richie, you'll be there, Ezzy, you'll be there, and Dave Manouk from illegalcurve.com will be there. So of
I
course,
guess we can tell everybody that we'll be doing the show from as well.
Yeah, we'll be live on air on Saturday from New Jersey and Sunday, of course, with the draft. So you can look forward to that here on TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca and illegalcurve.com for all your draft coverage.
Yep.
Let me ask you guys this question.
Yeah, sure.
It's not specifically to the draft itself, but it's all happening on that one day. And we talk about the NHL scheduling and how it's always a little bit bizarre. The draft's all happening on that one day. It's all happening on that Sunday. Okay, it's going to be 7 rounds. It's going to be a long day. Everybody's on board with that.
It used to be one day on Saturdays.
Right.
And 2 days, you mean?
No, it used to be one day
on
always on Saturdays before they went to the primetime Friday night thing.
It used to be morning thing.
Oh, I thought we were talking about what it was last year.
Years before.
Yeah.
Why is the NHL starting the draft at 2:00 in the afternoon?
We were having that conversation. The only thing I could come up with was television, or there was something else going on that forced them to do it later.
It's going
to
be a late night. Some of these general managers, I don't know if they can stay up that late anymore. You know, it's going
to
go.
We'll get to sleep in a little bit.
It's going
to
go. Yeah, that's the positive from your perspective there, Ezzy. But that draft's going to go till 10:00, 11:00 on TSN. So it should be a interesting night, Sunday, June 30th. You can get all your draft coverage everywhere you go. Interesting article from our colleague Gary Lawless in this week's Winnipeg Free Press regarding Claude Noel and his contract status.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's entering the final year of his contract, and Gary was sort of the thesis of Gary's article, if I can paraphrase it correctly, is that the Jets either need to do something with Claude Noel. They can't leave him as a lame duck coach for this year. Either he gets a 1-year contract extension, or, you know, if Kevin Cheveldayoff chooses to go that way, is they need to sort of pull the plug on Claude Noel's tenure this offseason. Do you think that being a lame duck head coach is as big of a situation and is something that needs to be addressed before the start of the new year?
I think it's as big a situation. I don't know if it needs to be addressed before the start of the year, but we've talked about it on the show before, Drew. When you have a lame duck coach, what happens is you start off poorly. What's the distraction? What's happening with Noel? You play well, it's a different story, but you play well, then you skid a bit. Well, what's happening with the coach? Is he going to get an extension? It's in the last year of his deal. And I think also what happens is there, you have a fair amount of pressure on the coach himself. And then the assistants, because the assistants don't know if they're going to be there with a new staff, you generally think. So there's a lot of moving parts there, and somewhat unnecessary pressure. Now, I, in the past, you've seen teams tack on another year to a deal just to make it easier to stomach either way. The coach can understand that he has at least another year in his deal of guaranteed money, and he doesn't have that distraction. There's no media questions. You know, is it as big of a deal if it's in Anaheim or Tampa Bay? No. If it's here, yeah, probably. It becomes quite a story. And Claude Noel is his first coaching gig. And
NHL head coaching gig.
Sorry, NHL head coaching gig. Yep. Aside from his interim stint in Columbus, but I'm counting, you know, being a real head coach here. You have to, you know, if you're Claude Noel, you feel pressure. There's no question about it. And you probably have some times where you lack a little bit of confidence. And overall, he'll have confidence. He's got to this point. He has to have confidence. But you might be wondering, okay, you know, or thinking this is a big year for me. And with that other year hanging, that end of the contract hanging about, if a team doesn't really want him around, we have no indication that the players don't like him. But at some point,
Alex Burmistrov notwithstanding.
Yeah, but overall, if the players don't want him around, it's pretty easy.
Just don't perform.
I don't know. It's a good question that you're raising. You know, Gary's article, because where's the team going? We don't know if Jets management wants to give him a 1 or 2 year extension. We don't know. We're gonna have to wait and see. But
I'd be very surprised if it was anything more than a 1 year extension.
Yeah, oh yeah.
But I also don't think that's gonna happen. I don't think anything's gonna happen. I think they're just going to go into the into the training camp and let him perform with the contract expiring. Now, if he starts off well, and the team is doing well, 1 month into the season, 6 weeks into the season, at that point, I wouldn't be surprised to see if he gets a contract extension and put the talk to bed for the rest of the year.
Right, and again,
but I don't see the Jets having any overwhelming desire to do it anytime sooner than that.
And you're probably right. And I can't, Richie mentioned there's pressure on Noel. I don't really think that can have necessarily a detrimental impact on the way the Jets play next year, because the Jets have come up short 2 years in a row now, and they've only made the playoffs once in franchise history. They've never won a playoff game. So it's a big year for the franchise and a big year for Noel. So it's a distraction maybe for Noel and people who are questioning Noel's long-term future, Richie. But as far as, if it's going to, put a cloud over the team, I don't really buy into that.
Well, let me
ask
you this.
That's just kind of, and I think that applies to most coaches as far as, you're in the last year of a contract and it's a lame duck coach, so the players don't play as hard for him.
You get fired, you have another job tomorrow.
Right.
You're Claude Noel, you get fired, you may never get another job. That's one thing.
Yeah, because of the fact he's a first-time head coach. Absolutely.
Not the youngest guy in the world. And the other thing you need to take into account is organizational direction. We talked about it on the show before, vis-a-vis results today. What if this team wants to, this organization wants to develop Jacob Trouba, and Claude Noel's job is on the line, and Trouba's made a few mistakes, and he needs to make the playoffs to save his job. Is he going to let Trouba make those mistakes and develop, or is he going to put in the veteran guy?
Well, I think fortunately for the Jets, it doesn't seem like they're going to have enough defensive depth to make that an issue.
But you understand the point.
But I understand the point.
Forward, that could be any position.
Organizational future versus the immediate future for a head coach. It's why you see a lot of general managers often make these panic trades to try and save their own jobs at the expense of the long-term health and the long-term viability of an organization.
Well, what do you do? Okay, let me ask you this, Drew.
Okay.
You're Claude Noel.
Yes.
They want.
I am wearing a vest.
The organization wants you to, and you have a lozenge in your mouth. The organization wants you to play a young guy more.
Okay.
So, we really think this guy can do it. And you're worried. Your job's on the line.
Yep.
You know that if you get fired, you may never get another job again.
Yep.
And you think my veteran forward, whoever it is going to be able to provide something that I know what I'm going to get. The expectation is going to be fairly in line with the results. And what would you do? And your job, you know that you may not get another contract. You are making pretty good money, and the next deal may not be that good money. And you don't know how long you're going to be around for. What would you do?
You're making a very good argument.
Self-preservation.
It's a good question. You're right, and it is self-preservation as far as coaches are hired to be fired. We've seen a bunch of coaches fired in the last couple of weeks. Patty Roy hired in Colorado. Drew, I know you want to talk about that, but isn't it also kind of the relationship with management, between management and coach? Like, what I mean is, how do the Jets feel? They brought Noel in to be the first coach in Jets history, and how do they feel he has done so far? And how do they feel, the plan? You know what I mean? Like, if they are happy with where he's at right now, then they'll give him an extension. And it's. I think it's also, you got to factor in that long term thing. Like, we thought Noel was going to be our coach for a while here, not necessarily. He's going to be a Barry Trotz in Nashville, but if the Jets are modeling themselves after Nashville, they probably think Noel's going to be our coach for a while.
Let me ask
we don't
you
know necessarily if, until Drew, there's that contract extension, we don't know what the long-term plan is. Do you guys agree with that?
Well, yeah, I do agree with that. Mm-hmm. And let me ask you this. Has Kevin Cheveldayoff ever publicly supported Claude Noel?
He had every opportunity. He had every opportunity to do it at the end of the year press conference, and
I think that's
didn't
what brought
really.
Up, brought up brought upon Gary's article.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. He could have given him a. This is guy's our coach, and he and whether or not you can easily nobody you can go back on that 6 months later or a year later, yep. and nobody's going to criticize you for right. it. But you're right. He has never been to me overwhelmingly effusive to Noel as a head coach. Now
he doesn't say much of anything.
He doesn't say much of anything. You're right. He's a great non-interview.
Yeah.
But you know. I also think that, you know, if they got rid of him, I think it would be, I don't think that would be justified, because really, what has the guy had to work with?
Well, that's true, but, I mean, I'm just talking about support-wise. Yeah. Like, when you know, you talk about, as you mentioned, the Barry Trotz and David Poile relationship, but we've had David Poile on our show on NHL Midweek, and David Poile and Barry Trotz are very close.
They're
and,
attached at the hip.
But this season, for example, is exactly what I'm talking about. They realized this season was a write-off, and if you watch Nashville at the end of the year, most people didn't. Half the roster, you wouldn't know who the names were.
Yeah. But Sergei Kostitsyn really had a great season, didn't he?
But GM and coach were saying, okay, we know this is a lost season. We're working together. There's no job. There's no questions about my job security. So I'm going to play these 15 young guys, and I'm going to be happy and fine with what happens from this year.
Mm-hmm.
Is that relationship present here? Because you can't replicate that if you don't have the guys with the right personalities and the right background and relationship.
Breaking news from the Twitter feed of Scott Brown from the Winnipeg Jets. Yeah. They have signed Austin Brassard. They got him under contract. Yep. He was a draft pick.
11.
In 2011.
Fifth round
in 2011. Yep. I think he played for Belleville.
Yes, he did.
Had to be signed by 4.
He had to be signed by 4 o'clock. Otherwise, he would be eligible for this year's draft again. He'd go back into the draft pool. The Winnipeg Jets have signed Austin Brassard. 2011 fifth round pick, still need to come to terms with Zachary Ewan. Yep.
Third rounder.
2011. They have till 4 o'clock to do that as well with Zachary Ewan. If it happens in the next 35 minutes, you'll hear about it on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Let's go to break. You're listening to TSN 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and the website is www.illegalcurve.com. In case you missed our interview with Craig Button earlier this hour, it is now available on the TSN1290.ca website. A lot of great draft talk with Craig Button, so you can get the interview at TSN1290.ca. Gentlemen, bad week. If you're John Tortorella in New York.
Or if you're not a fan of John Tortorella.
It was a good week.
Like some people, not me. But.
Right. Sean Avery.
Sean Avery.
Did he get on him on Twitter?
Yeah. Sean Avery got on him. Michael Grange, who's formerly of the Globe and Mail, absolutely destroyed him on Twitter, saying that he's a guy who should rot. Like this isn't language you normally...
I wouldn't go that far. I mean,
he called him a bad guy. He said he's a bad guy.
Well, telling someone
Ezzy,
should rot.
I mean, Ezzy, you've had a run-in with him.
Well, you know what? A lot of people...
What kind of question is that?
You know?
Nice. Remus has the clip.
What was that clip again?
What kind of question is that?
Yeah, you know what? And, you know, Matt Leibel also ended a scrum here in Winnipeg, and the Rangers weren't too happy about that. You know, Matt Leibel, of course, is the big show. But, you know, I think that, you know, Tortorella has a cup. He's got a cup ring, okay? So the guy's had success, but... We're in the media, okay? Like, we have full-time jobs. I did the journalism program, so I think I can comfortably say I'm in the media or whatever. As far as that goes,
The media are screaming no.
No, but you know what? Well, hey, I got a media pass. So Scott Brown's still
go on.
I'm still in favor with him. True North. No, I'm just kidding. But he did not treat the media well. Okay, he was flat out rude to the media. So I wasn't the biggest fan of his. Now, as far as a coach goes, he definitely couldn't get the Rangers, into the Stanley Cup Finals. And this year, they had less talent, as Richie has said before on this show. And you know, ultimately, he lost his job. I mean, the decision to bench Brad Richards, a guy that won the Conn Smythe Trophy with him, and went to New York. Because John Tortorella kind of, you know, put in a good word for the city of New York. Not that he has to, because New York's a great city. But you guys know what I mean. Richards went there because of his prior relationship with Tortorella. And, you know, he benched him, and they lost the series to the Boston Bruins, and he lost his job a few days later. Right?
I don't know how to answer that.
So, I mean, his tenure in New York, I wouldn't say was a great one.
No, I would suggest, you know, last year. he may have had the most talented team in the NHL, and he failed.
Well, he lost a jersey, I think, was the biggest thing. I mean, whether or not he would have beat LA is a different story. But I think that, Drew, playing New Jersey in the conference finals, they were the better team. They had home ice advantage, and they didn't win. And they didn't do it. They didn't get the job done. And I think with John Tortorella, the issue is this. When you're going to be a jackass to everybody, you better win. And when you're not, and you don't win, then nobody's going to, you know, try and help you out. And that goes for media. That goes for his players. I mean, let's be honest here. There's not a lot of love lost between a bunch of players. You saw Marion Gaborik's cryptic tweet that he sent out. I don't know exactly what something. Things happened for a reason, I believe it was.
Sure, because Gaborik obviously had a falling out there. I mean, I think you could easily say that Lundqvist's comments contributed to Tortorella being fired.
What were those? I didn't
hear Lundqvist
those.
Saying to the New York Daily News, Pat Leonard of the New York Daily News, not being especially effusive about re-signing with the Rangers when his contract's up after next year. You know, we'll have to see what the situation is here. Might want to see some change. You know, I'm not going to be back here necessarily if this guy's still here.
The oddest part about John Tortorella, his personality aside, is the style of play that he's employed with the New York Rangers. I mean, it's a little
outdated.
Yeah, remember Pat Riley with the New York Knicks in the 90s? He went from being Showtime with the Lakers. I mean, you remember that, Drew. You were about 55.
Yeah.
And Showtime with the Lakers. And he went to New York, and he changed his style of coaching. And what he did there, Drew, was he changed the style of coaching based upon the talent that he was given. Mm-hmm. And they built a rough and tough team, and the basketball style has changed, obviously, since then with hand-checking rules and such. But what happened with Tortorella is he came to New York. They handed him an abundance of skill. I mean, remember this year you had Gaborik and Nash and a bunch of guys who have tons of skill.
Mm-hmm.
And he coached and a defense that can move the puck and can make and can skate. And he had them play in like a cocoon. It was the oddest thing. It didn't make any sense logically. And Glenn Sather, guys, Say what you will about his tenure in New York, and it started out rocky. I think it's become better, and they've become a very respectable organization again. But he coached and built the 1980s Oilers. He appreciates offensive play. At some point in time, he had to have been thinking to himself, this is what I brought in here?
Hey, that's the part. I mean, it seemed like Tortorella was insistent on making some sort of bizarre point about the style he plays, as opposed to putting his players in the best position to succeed on a night-in, night-out basis. I mean, New York's defense, which certainly was not the strong suit of the team, and I get trying to play a responsible style, but you don't necessarily have to make your forwards play with one hand tied behind their back while playing a responsible style. I mean, you know, you talked about the Boston Bruins earlier. I mean, they're certainly not the same team, but the Bruins were responsible defensively while at the same time having a very solid offensive core.
Drew, you know what I think the lasting image, not image, but the lasting memory we're going to have is John Tortorella, you know, over the last four or so years with the Rangers, because he came in late that one year, is Brad Richards struggling to get his game going. And, you know, we've talked about it. He's lost his step. He's not the 2004 Brad Richards that he is, right? I mean, he's 33.
Sure, of course.
But he's struggling, and, you know, John Tortorella benches him instead of, you know, coaching him to get his game going.
Tortorella needs to bear a portion of that blame because he put the guy in a position not to succeed.
Yeah, he put him on the fourth line, and he's not a fourth line guy, and you know, sure, Derek Stepan and Derek Brassard become your one and two line centers, but he doesn't get one of his key players going. Brad Richards is a key piece of that team. They signed him to a long term contract, and that's, you know, going to be the lasting memory, you know, for John Tortorella. He didn't get the most out of his star players, and then he threw him under the bus. That's what he did. Yeah. Threw him under the bus, benched him.
Threw Carl Hagelin under the bus. Finally, he's been thrown under the bus. Well deserved.
Does he get another job soon-ish?
I don't think
so. In the NHL?
No, I don't think so either. I agree. I don't think so. I mean, based on the way he's coaching, I just don't see it right now.
It can't be
in a hot media. Sorry, Izzy, I don't interrupt. It can't be in a hot media market anyways.
And he shouldn't get media job on top of that.
All joking aside, you know, what Tortorella did with the media and Brooksy and all that stuff.
And Ezzy and all that stuff.
I think 3 years ago, I was still a fan of his. I think he lost it a bit. I think he lost his cool. And you're rude with the media. you're really hard on your players and disrespectful to your players, both in public and not in public, eventually doesn't the act wear thin? I mean, if you're a positive guy, like look at a Babcock. I mean, Babcock is right in there. He has the respect of his players. Did most of the Rangers respect Tortorella?
Obviously, based on a lot of the comments we've heard at the end of the year, not overwhelmingly. Nobody wanted to go to bat for the guy.
Like Lundqvist, he could win the Vezina Trophy again this year. He probably will. You think he respected Tortorella towards the end? I don't think he did.
Well, he also, you know, his style of play
puts all the pressure on Lundqvist. Exactly right. If you know, if you're Henrik Lundqvist, you're saying to yourself, "My God, this guy is leaving me in a shooting gallery."
Who puts a Vezina winner in that situation? I mean, like Henrik Lundqvist is an unbelievable talent, one of the best goalies of the last 10 years. And you know, in New York, they chant MVP for Lundqvist. Why would you throw him under the bus?
Well, if anything, you can play a bit of a more open style because you know that you have Lundqvist back there, and you can let your players play to their best abilities. You can let the offensive talent flourish. Let's go to break. When we come back, another head coaching move, this time in Denver with the Colorado Avalanche. You're listening to The Illegal Curve on TSN 1290. Richie, would you like to preview or introduce today's Bruce Springsteen song?
Why don't you guess?
I don't know. We already discussed this. I don't know. So why don't you educate our audience? You are the Springsteen connoisseur amongst us.
Are you sure this isn't Daft Punk?
Remus is a Daft Punk band, I've heard.
And Springsteen.
This is Because of Night Live.
Richie got me into Springsteen, and you were there.
Yes, I was.
One of the greatest concerts I've ever been to.
Hold on, a couple of things. First off, this song's actually made big by Patti Smith, even though Bruce wrote the song. But
that's his ex-wife?
No, she's a singer.
Is this Richie Pollock or Howard Manshine?
Yeah. Actually, I saw Howard Manshine last week. Drew.
Yes?
We came into the coffee shop this morning, Ezzy and I rolled in a little later than you, and you were listening to Bruce.
I was. I'm just trying to catch up to his catalog. I don't have the encyclopedic knowledge that
Drew just
possess.
Likes Glory Days. Drew puts Glory Days on repeat.
Yeah, just because I remember, so I can remember my Glory Days as a minor league baseball player.
Still a pretty good Jewish slow pitch player, though. I hear.
Thank you. I am. Yeah. It's a pinnacle of my athletic career. That and my under 12 tennis championships.
Wow. Yeah. What about when you skated at the Winnipeg Arena as a 5-year-old?
That was also up there.
What was that called? Goals for Kids, right?
No. That was the foundation.
No, but what was the intermission thing called? It was like three stars.
Community club shootout or something.
Where was the arena located back then?
Back then, it was a small little barn in the north end of Winnipeg. You know. It was prior to the Winnipeg Arena.
Drew as a kid used to watch the Bombers games, the Great West Life, where Great West Life is now.
Oh, yeah, the Osborne Stadium is the word you're looking for there.
Whatever happened to the old velodrome?
It's now a Chapters. Anyways, Patrick Waugh got the job in Colorado as the new head coach of the Colorado Avalanche. Is this the right hire for the Avs moving forward with that roster and that team?
I'll tell you one thing quickly before we get into that. I mean, Waugh swoops in right at the right time, and we had Al Strachan on the show kind of saying that Joe Sakic's already been part of the decision-making. I have great respect for Joe Sakic and Patrick Waugh, but boy, their timing is quite impeccable, isn't it?
Yeah, swoop in right when the young players are...
Bad season, no expectations, get the first overall draft pick, be able to get probably Seth Jones, have Deshane Landeskog, make a couple moves, and boom, you're looking good. And But I think it's a good hire, Drew. Patrick Waugh has paid his dues as a... As a coach, he coached in the QMJHL. He coached successfully. He won a Memorial Cup. He brings a certain passion. I actually really do like the hire. I think it's a great move. I'm surprised that they gave him that much power.
Sure, because he's the director of player personnel?
He's the vice president of hockey operations. Sakic is his title is executive vice president.
Right, okay.
So Greg just Sherman, like you're an executive host.
Mm-hmm. Greg Sherman and Brian Colangelo were going to be going for coffee and doing nothing at their actual jobs.
Well, I mean, you know, on the hire, this didn't surprise anybody, or it shouldn't have surprised anybody, because they tried to get Patrick Waugh in there before they hired Sacco, right? I mean, we know that. I mean, you know, Adrian Dater has chronicled that, and we all know that by now. That's common knowledge, that Patrick Waugh could have been the coach before Sacco, but he wanted that management title. And you know, the story goes, supposedly, that they wouldn't give it to him. So now they need him, and now they've given him that management role. Good friends with Joe Sakic. You know, now Joe Sakic's in there. He has more power than Greg Sherman now.
You mentioned, though, they need him right now, and I think he knew that. And Patrick was he seems like a smart businessman.
I think and Richie, they need him to sell tickets as well, mm-hmm. right? I mean, Colorado.
Yeah.
Remember, Colorado, the glory days of Sakic and Forsberg, and
you can play glory days now.
No, but they sold out the Pepsi Center every night. They're not doing that anymore.
No, they haven't done it for the last 5 years.
Yeah, and the team is struggling. So I mean, you know, similar, you know, to in Dallas, bringing in a Yager, that didn't work out. But I mean, Dallas and Colorado, those were two Western powerhouses year after year in the late 90s and early 2000s. And, you know, now with Matt Duchene and Ryan O'Reilly and Paul Stastny, okay, those are good players. They're going to get Seth Jones, maybe. Andrew McKinnon, maybe. Pardon me, Nathan McKinnon.
Yeah. Andrew McKinnon is a friend of ours.
McKinnon is a friend of ours. Sorry. Nathan. Oh, that'd be funny if he was listening, eh? Nathan. They're going to get one of Nathan McKinnon, Seth Jones, or Drew N.
That was great.
So it is a rebirth of the franchise now.
Let me ask you guys this question. Richie, you made the point of Wah paying his dues.
Yes.
And he has. He rode the buses in the queue with the Remparts for 5-6 years now.
It's 10 years, is it?
Maybe 10 years. I mean, yeah.
But 10-year career coaching.
You know, contrast that to the news out of New York that Messier wants to be considered for the Rangers job.
Yeah.
Or, I mean, even to a lesser extent, that Gretzky
different.
Allegedly.
Gretzky's
according,
different.
Yeah, Gretzky is.
Coached in the NHL before.
According to Nick Kyprios, is interested in the Rangers job. Again, he was in the NHL, so he did pay somewhat of dues.
And he has a great relationship with Sather. I don't. Right. Messier, though, is a weird one because he has limited coaching experience.
Doesn't have any coaching experience, does he?
No.
Spengler Cup.
Well, I mean, he's a special advisor to Sather right now, right? Mm-hmm. That's his title.
Yeah.
And but he's not doing coaching. So for me, that's
not watching film.
For Glenn Sather to give him that coaching position, you'd think that Messier maybe would start off in his assistant. You know what I mean? Like, he wouldn't just go right into a head coaching position.
I don't think he wants to be.
It almost makes you wonder if they're going to bring both of them on board.
Sure, bring back the entire team.
Like, I could see Gretzky and Messier, head coach, assistant coach type of thing.
Because I can't see Messier with no experience as a coach, despite his pedigree and everything else. Mm-hmm. I mean, do you see him as a great X's and O's guy, the guy who's going to sit there and break down the tape?
I'll tell you what, he would be a good leader because he is in the pantheon of amazing leaders in New York sports history.
You'd be hiring a motivational speaker.
So the concern would be that you're hiring a Mike Singletary.
Yeah, a guy.
Yeah, exactly. That's a good comparison.
A guy who can, you know, who's been through the trenches and everything else and knows how to win. But we saw how his tenure ended in San Francisco with his pants around his ankles. And that was an embarrassing end for Mike Singletary as a head coach. Mm-hmm.
But,
so,
but at the same time, he never had a relationship with the general manager as Messi has with Sather. And it's interesting. I don't know how that'll happen, but I do think that you would feel more comfortable with Wah because of his experience. And it doesn't mean that coaches from junior to the NHL have had great success in the past.
No. I mean, we saw how long. I mean, it took Guy Boucher 2 years from being a genius to not being a genius anymore.
It seems to happen a lot in sports, doesn't it?
Yeah. I mean, the next hot prospect is only as good as the players that perform on the ice.
And that in this case, when in Colorado, you don't really have the pressure to win that you have in New York. Because New York's a win-now, not only win-now city, but a win-now roster. And not that they can't be good for a long time, but Colorado is, okay, turn this thing around, give a couple of years, and then be really good. And it's a great time for him to come in and coach, a great time for Sakic to take the reins. That's what I'm saying. They're opportunistic, and rightfully so.
Yeah. But it's going to be fun. Isn't it going to be fun to watch Patrick Roy behind that bench? Because he's so passionate.
I'm looking forward to the first
greatest
time that you scrum with him
time.
After a game.
Yeah. No,
He's going to have all his Stanley Cup rings
in
his ears.
I idolized Patrick Roy with the Habs. So.
You're a Bernard guy.
Cheers. Congratulations.
He's brilliant.
He's a good guy.
And jeers.
No, not good enough. He's a bad boy.
I never seen something like this.
Surprisingly not good.
5 years we've been, or however many
hold
years
on,
we've been doing
on.
The show.
No,
you're
no,
nothing
no,
but Brodeur, Brodeur,
no,
Brodeur.
But Brodeur came in 93. Wah came in 85, 86. I was fans of both, and I think I became a bigger Brodeur fan. But still, Patrick Wah, 86, 93 Habs. I mean,
you were five in 1986. Four, actually.
No, but in 93, I mean, the credible run with Desjardins and Kirk Muller. Come on. I've always liked Wah. I've never been not a Wah fan.
Richie.
You're going to like my cheer, by the way.
Some of my cheer. Wah. I'm cheering another great season from Bob Cole.
I like it.
He gets ripped. I know there's an article about him this week, and he gets ripped
all the time.
How are you ripping Bob Cole?
But
he's a legend.
I know he doesn't get some of the numbers right and all that stuff, but I still love the voice. I still love the ability to capture the moment. And I'm going to continue to cheer him. He said he doesn't want to let it go, so as long as they don't get rid of him, he's going to keep going.
It's actually funny. Bob McKenzie on Twitter also said that, you know, there's two guys that are the voice of hockey, and I think he said it was Foster Hewitt one. And he said, with all due respect to his colleagues, you know, who broadcast the game very well, he said, it's as long as Bob Cole's doing it, he's the voice of hockey in this country.
It's exactly
if you have a chance,
right.
Check out Sean Fitzgerald of the National Post. Wrote a great article about Bob Cole. We've had Sean Fitzgerald on before. I mean, Bob Cole's a living legend. If you don't acknowledge that, you don't know what you're talking about. Sorry. I'm going to cheer Marty Brodeur.
No, of course you are.
Doing a great job doing analysis for CBC, so good to see Marty Brodeur.
Oh, my God.
I like it.
We got to start recording Ezzy's cheers.
Okay. Go ahead.
I'll wrap up cheers and jeers. I'm jeering Stephen Walkham. That call that he made in Game 7, I thought was...
What was that?
It was an atrocious call, and it's funny, you know, I usually don't pick on the officials. I remember Stephen Walkham in his rookie year as an official with the Winnipeg Jets 1.0 refereed a game, and he was an atrocious game that he called, and the Jets ended up losing in overtime as a result of a slash that went uncalled by Stephen Walkham. And ever since then, I've always remembered him in the back of my mind as an official that I didn't like, and it bore out this past week with his performance in Game 7 of the Red Wings Blackhawks.
Don't hold a grudge or anything there,
Drew. I've been holding a grudge for a lot of years nowadays. Anyway, Stephen Walkham, boo. That's it for this Saturday afternoon and the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. Big thank you to our guests, Craig Button and Mike Colligan. In case you missed any of the program, it will be available for download both on iTunes and on the TSN1290.ca website. Big thank you to our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club and the Certified General Accountants Association of Manitoba. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/IllegalCurve, and the website with the latest NHL and Winnipeg Jets news is www.illegalcurve.com. For producer Tim and producer Michael Remus, for my colleagues Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. If it's Saturday, it's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
You've been listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Join us again for serious hockey talk, Saturdays from noon to 3. The Illegal Curve Hockey Show, only on TSN 1290. Your official home of the Winnipeg Jets.